Welcome to this deep dive. We're looking today at how to really cultivate a thriving environment in software development.
Yeah, and you shared a fascinating paper, the one by Catherine M. Hicks on psychological affordances.
Exactly. Psychological affordances can provide a missing explanatory layer. It's quite a title, but really interesting.
It is. And we're also pulling in some definitions of developer experience from places like Microsoft and LinkedIn just to get that industry context.
Right, sort of setting the stage, because our mission today really is to get under the hood of why simply throwing money at tools and tech doesn't always fix things, doesn't guarantee a great developer experience.
It often doesn't. We need to explore that crucial role of the, well, the psychological environment.
Yeah. And how understanding that can maybe help us create software development experiences that are actually, you know, better, more effective, more enjoyable for the people doing the work.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's start there. Why is a positive developer experience actually so important? I mean, it sounds obvious, but what does the research say?
Well, it goes beyond just, you know, feeling good at work.
Mm.
The research shows really concrete benefits.
Like what?
Things like higher quality code, definitely better individual productivity, and teams just function more effectively. This isn't just guesswork. Studies over the years have shown this consistently.
Okay, so happier, more supported devs actually produce better results. That makes sense.
It does. And it seems the positive impact isn't just limited to the code itself.
How so?
Well, a good developer experience can actually contribute to healthier pipelines, getting more people into software careers in the first place.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and maybe more engagement with open source projects, which, you know, benefits everyone in the tech world.
Yeah.
And it can even lead to more resilient organizations overall.
Right, because people feel supported, they stick around, they contribute more long term, it creates a kind of positive feedback loop.
Exactly. But the paper also points out something else, which is that despite all this investment and focus, a lot of developers are still facing some pretty significant challenges.
Yeah, what kind of stressors are common?
Well, even with all the new tools, many developers report, you know, really high cognitive demands, frequent project setbacks or failures, a feeling that their work isn't really seen or valued by the organization. And unfortunately, things like burnout and just not having enough support are still widespread.
That sounds really tough. And it's not just the junior folks feeling this pressure, is it? I think I read that even senior engineers are feeling it.
That's absolutely right. The pace of change, especially now with generative AI coming onto the scene, it's making even very experienced developers feel anxious about whether their skills will still be relevant soon.
Wow. It really highlights that constant need to learn and adapt in this field.
It really does.
Okay, now there was this term mentioned, social debt. That sounds intriguing. What's the core idea there? How does it connect?
Think of it like technical debt, but for the human side of things, it's the buildup of negative social costs within a development team or organization.
Like poor communication or...
Yeah, or maybe constant context switching, interpersonal friction, things like that. The key point is that these burdens on the people can actually lead to shortcuts or maladaptive behaviors that then negatively impact the software quality itself.
Oh, okay. So the human and technical sides are really tightly linked. You can't separate them.
Not really, no.
Yeah.
It shows how intertwined they are.
Right. So a positive developer experience is clearly vital, but getting there is more complex than just buying the latest tools. Let's nail down what we actually mean by developer experience. We have those definitions from Microsoft and LinkedIn. Do they focus on different things?
They do, slightly. Microsoft's definition seems to zero in on how easy or difficult it is for a developer to do their core tasks, like coding, debugging, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's very task-oriented.
Okay, and LinkedIn?
LinkedIn takes a broader view. They talk about overall satisfaction with the tools, yes, but also systems, processes, even the physical facilities. And interestingly, they mention empowering teams to fix issues beyond just tools and infrastructure.
So Microsoft is more about the mechanics of coding, while LinkedIn is looking at the whole environment, the whole picture.
Pretty much. And it seems like the industry, maybe naturally, has often gravitated towards those more concrete, tangible improvements first. You know, better tools, faster builds, smoother workflows.
Yeah, that makes sense. You can see and measure those things easily.
That's a key point. Many DX initiatives do start with those visible, tangible upgrades. It feels like progress.
But as the paper argues, this focus on the tangible might be missing a huge piece of the puzzle. What are the limits of just throwing better tools at the problem?
Well, the central argument, really, is that if you only focus on the tools and you completely ignore the underlying psychological context, the culture, the norms, the feelings, you're likely going to fall short. The results will be limited.
Right. You can't just assume that giving someone a better tool will automatically make them happier or more collaborative or, you know, change their fundamental behaviors.
Exactly. It's like giving a professional chef the best nines in the world, but then putting them in a chaotic, stressful kitchen where nobody communicates. The knives are great, but the environment undermines their ability to use them effectively.
That's a great analogy. The psychological environment can just kill the potential benefits of the tool.
Precisely. The success of any improvement, tool-based or otherwise, really depends on the existing psychological attitudes and the social climate it lands in. And the paper makes this point. Interventions are done with people, not on people. Their perspective matters.
Okay, this brings us right to the core idea of the paper, these psychological affordances. This sounds like the missing link. Can you break down what that term means and why it's so critical?
Sure. So we know physical affordances, right? Mm-hmm. A chair affords sitting. A door handle affords pulling or turning.
Okay.
Psychological affordances are similar, but they exist in our social world, in our interactions. They're the opportunities that our environment, our team, our organization provides for us to experience things, to interpret events, and to respond to them in certain ways.
So it's about what the environment makes possible or likely in terms of how people think and feel and act.
Exactly. Think about developer experience efforts. They often have specific behavioral goals, right? Like we want more collaboration, or we want developers to feel comfortable raising security risks, or we want lower attrition.
Yeah, those are common goals.
But whether developers actually do those things, collaborate more, speak up about risks, depends heavily on the psychological affordances present in their workplace. Does the environment afford collaboration? Does it afford speaking up without fear?
I see. So the environment can either support or actively hinder the very outcomes the initiative is trying to achieve, completely separate from the tools or processes introduced.
Precisely. And if we don't understand these affordances, these shared ways developers perceive and react to their context, it can lead to a lot of confusion.
Why does this team thrive with old tools while another team struggles with the latest stuff?
Exactly that. Or why does the same agile practice work wonders in one group and completely flop in another? The answer often lies in these underlying psychological affordances, the different social and mental opportunities available in each context.
Okay, let's make this more concrete. The paper gives three really good examples. Let's walk through them. First, the code cleanup initiative. What happens there?
Okay, so the scenario is an organization decides to invest in better tooling to help developers tackle technical debt. This is something developers often ask for, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But here's the rub. Leadership in this organization doesn't really seem to value or recognize work that isn't directly building new shiny features.
Ah, so the cleanup work is kind of invisible or seen as less important.
Exactly. So developers start to worry. They think, if I spend my time on this cleanup using this new tool, will it even be noticed? Or worse, will it look like I'm not delivering features? And will that hurt my chances for promotion?
Okay, so you've got the tool affording easier cleanup, but the culture affords fear and discourages using it. The psychological affordance is negative.
Precisely. The tool makes it possible technically, but the perceived lack of value from leadership creates a psychological barrier. It doesn't support the desired behavior. Developers might even actively avoid it because they perceive potential negative career consequences. The tool sits unused.
Wow. Okay. Example two, the open source contribution campaign. They're offering incentives like badges, recognition. What's the potential pitfall?
The issue here lies in the potential culture within that specific open source community. Let's say this community has a reputation, maybe deserved or not, for being a bit unwelcoming to newcomers.
Like gatekeeping or really harsh code reviews.
Yeah, or perhaps newcomers, especially from underrepresented groups, face overly critical pushback, maybe even comments that feel personal or biased. In that environment, the external reward of a fancy badge might just not be enough motivation.
Right. The potential for a really negative social experience, that strong negative psychological affordance, completely outweighs the positive incentive of getting a badge. New contributors might just decide it's not worth the risk.
Exactly. The badge affords some external validation, sure. But the environment affords potential social threat or exclusion, which acts as a much stronger deterrent for many people.
Okay, final example. The AI Learning Initiative. The company provides access to new AI tools, maybe even dedicated time for learning. Sounds great on paper. What could go wrong?
Well, even in this seemingly supportive setup, the existing social norms within the development team itself can be the roadblock.
How so?
Imagine a culture where spending time learning is subtly disparaged, maybe seen as not real coding, or where developers feel they can't ask basic questions or admit they're struggling with the new AI concepts for fear of looking incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
Add to that maybe a general underlying anxiety about AI potentially replacing their jobs.
Huh.
Even with the tools and the time, these factors can stop people from engaging.
So it's like the fear of judgment, the fear of the unknown, the lack of psychological safety. These negative affordances are blocking the path to learning, even though the resources are there.
Precisely. The time and tools provide the opportunity, the technical affordance, to learn. But the psychological climate, the fear, the norms, can completely undermine their willingness or ability to actually take advantage of it.
These examples really drive home how critical that social context is for developer experience. It's so much more than just one person coding alone in a corner, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, that lone coder stereotype is mostly a myth. Software development, especially on anything complex, is intensely collaborative.
Right.
Developers are constantly interacting, reviewing code, building on each other's work, needing to understand different perspectives, negotiating designs. It's deeply social.
And these developers, they're people. Like all of us, they have fundamental psychological needs that need to be met at work for them to thrive.
Absolutely crucial. Things like feeling psychologically safe, feeling understood and included by their peers and leaders, having a sense of competence and self-worth, or self-integrity, as the paper puts it.
And when those needs aren't met?
Well, it obviously impacts their well-being, but it also directly affects their ability to do their best work to be creative, focused, and produce high-quality, innovative software.
The paper mentions that developers are constantly kind of scanning their social environment. What are they looking for? How does that shape what they do?
They're essentially trying to read the room all the time. They're assessing the unspoken rules. What's expected of a developer like me here? What behaviors get rewarded or punished? Are my efforts likely to succeed in this context? Do people see me as belonging?
And that ongoing interpretation guides their actions, leads them towards behaviors they think are adaptive in that specific environment.
Exactly. It shapes whether they engage in ways that are productive and healthy, adaptive, or maybe ways that are less helpful or even detrimental, maladaptive, like avoiding certain tasks or staying silent.
And there's a link between meeting those psychological needs and cognitive function.
Yes, definitely. Research suggests that when people feel socially safe, included and valued, it can actually free up cognitive resources. It can boost creativity, mental flexibility, and improve focus and attention during complex problem solving.
It literally helps them think better.
In a way, yes. Conversely, feeling threatened or excluded consumes mental energy that could otherwise be used for the work itself.
You mentioned WISE interventions earlier. How do they fit into this picture of psychological affordances and developer experience?
Okay, so imagine a developer encounters a situation that feels threatening, maybe negative feedback or feeling excluded. Wow. In that moment, they quickly try to make sense of it. They form an appraisal.
Right.
A WISE intervention tries to offer them a different, more constructive way to interpret that situation, a new perspective. If the developer finds this new perspective compelling and plausible within their context, it can shift their response away from defensiveness or withdrawal towards something more positive. It helps them see a different affordance.
Okay. So pulling this together, it sounds like many typical developer experience initiatives, even if they don't use this language, are implicitly aiming for these social psychological outcomes. Things like making developers happier, more motivated, feeling more autonomous.
Exactly. That's often the underlying goal, whether stated or not. But the key is, you can't just declare, be happier or be more motivated. These things emerge from the environment.
They depend on the psychological affordances being right.
Precisely. Achieving those outcomes depends heavily on the social context. Understanding how people in that team see things, what the norms are for solving problems, or giving feedback that's crucial for any DX initiative that hopes to influence motivation or collaboration.
And even something that looks solitary, like contributing to open source, still requires navigating a social landscape.
Absolutely. To be effective in most open source projects, you need to understand the community's values, how work gets done, how decisions are made. It's rarely just about the code in isolation.
It's interesting how you mentioned that common practices we already use in software development, like workshops or pair programming, can actually be viewed through this lens as social psychological interventions.
Yes, that's a great point from the paper. A security workshop, for instance, isn't just teaching technical skills. It can also build confidence and a sense of control, which are psychological factors.
And pair programming, or ensemble programming.
Those can directly foster social support, build relationships, create a stronger sense of belonging, and shared understanding. Practitioners often use these techniques because they feel like they work. And part of why they work is likely due to these positive psychological effects.
And when individuals start adopting these more positive mindsets or behaviors because the environment affords it, it can create a kind of positive cycle.
Exactly. It builds what the paper calls resilient beliefs, things like stronger social connections, greater self-efficacy, maybe more trust. These beliefs then help developers navigate the inevitable challenges and stresses of the job more effectively. Small positive shifts can create this upward spiral.
And this seems critical, and the environment has to actually support these new ways of thinking or behaving, right?
Yeah.
You can't just tell someone, think positively, if their daily experience constantly contradicts that.
That is absolutely crucial. If there's a mismatch, if the intervention promotes one thing, but the broader team or organizational context signals the opposite, it can backfire.
How so?
It can lead to cynicism, frustration, maybe even make things worse than doing nothing at all. The intervention message needs to resonate with and be reinforced by the actual lived experience, the existing psychological affordances. The seed needs fertile soil, as the paper puts it later.
Okay, let's circle back to those examples and look specifically at how these psychological affordances can make or break an intervention, starting with the code cleanup initiative and the visibility of software effort. What are the key affordances there?
The big one is the perceived visibility and value of non-feature work. Does the environment afford recognition for cleaning up tech debt? If the answer feels like no, that's a powerful negative affordance.
And research supports this.
Yeah, the paper cites work showing that when developers feel their efforts, including this kind of maintenance or cleanup work, are visible to colleagues and managers, it's linked to positive things like a stronger learning culture, more autonomy, higher motivation. Feeling seen matters.
So for that code cleanup tool to actually get used effectively, it's not enough to just provide the tool. Leadership needs to actively signal that this work is valued, is visible, is important.
Exactly. And related to that are affordances around role ambiguity and the organization's attitude towards failure. If roles aren't clear, or if uncovering problems like hidden tech debt is implicitly punished, developers won't feel safe engaging in that cleanup work.
So it might need a multi-level approach, looking at the individual, the team, the whole organization.
Often, yes. Thinking about organizational mindsets, does the organization value learning and improvement, or just immediate feature output? Fostering a growth mindset, explicitly valuing code quality, these help create positive affordances for that kind of work.
Okay, now let's shift to the open source contribution campaign and the belonging norms in those communities. What are the critical psychological affordances?
Here, the absolute key affordance is the sense of belonging. Does this community afford newcomers, especially those who might feel like outsiders, a sense that they can fit in, contribute meaningfully, and be accepted?
And if it doesn't?
Then experiences that threaten that sense of belonging, like harsh feedback, dismissive attitudes, or that pushback mentioned particularly for minoritized developers, become really powerful negative affordances. They can drain mental resources and just shut down the motivation to contribute, regardless of incentives like badges.
So those early interactions when someone is trying to figure out if they belong are really crucial moments.
Hugely important. That's when people are forming their identity beliefs related to that community.
Mm.
Negative experiences then can have a lasting impact.
So to make that contribution campaign successful, the focus needs to be on actively cultivating positive affordances for belonging.
Absolutely. Things like micro-inclusions, small, everyday actions that signal welcome and value. Having support or mentorship from established community members, especially those from similar backgrounds, can be incredibly powerful in inoculating against stereotype threat and fostering belonging.
And efforts to improve belonging aren't just helping individuals. They can lift the whole community.
That's what the research suggests. When belonging is stronger across the board, it's linked to better well-being, people sticking around longer, achieving more, and even higher productivity and lower anxiety.
Makes sense. Okay, finally, the AI learning initiative and how contest cultures or certain organizational climates can impact the adoption of new technology. What psychological affordances matter here?
A major one is whether the environment affords learning and experimentation without excessive fear of failure or judgment. If there's a lack of support for taking time to learn, or if mistakes are seen as signs of incompetence, that's a huge barrier. That's a negative affordance for skill building.
And the organization's overall attitude towards change plays a role.
Definitely. Is change embraced as an opportunity, or is it viewed with suspicion and resistance? And specifically with AI, this concept of AI skill threat comes in the fear and uncertainty developers might feel about their future relevance.
So does the environment afford safety and support in the face of this potentially threatening change?
That's the key question. A culture that genuinely values learning, fosters psychological safety, and promotes belonging can act as a buffer against that threat. It creates positive affordances that help people engage with the new technology rather than retreat from it.
So to get developers to actually use those AI tools and learning resources, organizations need to actively build a learning culture where it's okay to not know things, okay to ask questions, okay to make mistakes along the way.
Precisely. Signaling clearly that learning is valued work makes a huge difference. Encouraging open, non-defensive, collaborative attitudes around learning is vital.
And are there individual strategies that can help too?
Yes. The paper mentions things grounded in psychological research, like promoting a growth mindset, believing abilities can be developed, using self-affirmation techniques, reflecting on core values, and practicing self-compassion when facing difficulties. These can help individuals navigate the anxiety of skill shifts more effectively, especially when the environment also provides support. Tools like team premortems can also help anticipate and address these psychological factors proactively.
This has been incredibly insightful. This deep dive really hammers home that building a great software delivery environment, one that's positive and productive, is just so much more complex than picking the right tools off a shelf.
It really is. It's deeply fundamentally intertwined with the psychological experiences of the people doing the work.
And understanding these psychological affordances, what the environment makes possible or likely in terms of thoughts, feelings, actions, gives us a much richer, more useful lens for designing interventions that might actually work.
It truly does. It helps explain why things succeed or fail. It highlights that mindset X context interaction that's so important. The success of any DX initiative, that seed you plant,
depends hugely on the existing social environment, the soil it lands in.
Exactly. You need that healthy psychological environment, those positive affordances, for these initiatives to really take root, grow, and make a lasting difference.
And it feels like this current focus on developer experience in the industry is actually a fantastic opportunity, not just for improving software development, but maybe for contributing to our understanding of healthy, productive workplaces more generally.
I completely agree. There's a real chance here for more collaboration between researchers and practitioners, learning from each other to figure out what really works in creating environments where people can thrive.
It's exciting potential.
It is.
So as we wrap up, here's something for you, the listener, to think about. What small changes could your team, or maybe your wider organization, make to better acknowledge this psychological context of software development?
Yeah, maybe start by reflecting. How visible is different kinds of work in your context? What are the real lived norms around learning, asking questions, or giving feedback?
Just thinking about those existing affordances could be the very first step towards cultivating that more fertile soil we've been discussing, creating an environment that's ultimately more supportive, effective, and maybe even more enjoyable for everyone involved.